All right, let's stop there. And I think you had a question as well, or was it answered?
It might be answered. I may have to come back.
Okay. Does anybody else?
This is an analysis that really eliminates all role for human agency. It says that the world is fixed as it's going to be, and all we can do is wait for things to fall apart and then get involved in this war of each of all against all, so that we end up with Easter Island where there's not a shred of life left. And that's what would happen if you have this, collapse that you're sort of predicating your new society on. And we can't make choices about the kind of economy we're going to have. And we can't make choices about what we're going to do with our productive lives or how we're going to manage the ecosystem. Mind you, primitive peoples, they manage their ecosystems. The evidence is very, very clear about that. They did not just live passively in the world, letting it act upon them. But you see no possibility for human struggle. And then what you offer us in its place is a pie-in-the-sky vision of much smaller population living as animals, basically, in the world without planning, without decision-making, because we're not capable of making decisions, you see. And on the one hand, there's no way of getting to there. There's a complete, it's like a religious millennium, which descends upon us from the heavens, and we can do nothing to influence it or shape it. And so we might as well all just go out and, have a big party and, just let the world go to hell in a handbasket of that analysis. And on the other hand, we can't shape it at the end of the day. So we're left with no agency at all. We're just like termites. It's the wackiest approach to politics that I've ever heard of. And I don't see how it has anything to do with anarchism, which is about people taking control of their lives and organizing their own communities and trying to build free societies in which we deal with each other responsibly in solidarity and with our planet. The most horrific idea I've ever heard.
I'm glad we could have that here tonight.
All right. I think my views have been summarized, so we're done. No,
did you have a response to what he was saying?
I just have a lot of responses. That's just nonsense. I don't really know how you got all that out of that, but okay. That's what I'm saying about that.
Fair enough. You want to respond, or do you have a response to it? So,
well, I was going to say something. Well, that's the conversation, but you can go first before I go.
Why don't you just respond to that really quickly, and then we'll move on to maybe a different thought.
Okay, yeah, we are animals, and it's not about saying there's no such thing as agency. I'm saying political power, even on a micro scale, on the levels of chiefs, one thing. But, the colonial notion of saying primitives and identifying primitives as a group of people, we use the term, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, primitives. We understand there's a colonial history behind it, as with most words. The idea being that primitive and civilized were historical ideas of trying to separate the stages of history laid out within the linear notions of progress in history. Part of the primitivist critique is saying that language itself, the nature of language itself within societies removed from context has a lot of oppressive issues. But what are we going to do? We're kind of stuck with it. We use the terms. It's tongue-in-cheek. But the characterization that all primitive people are the same is despicable. The idea that primitive people are necessarily changing their environment is generally preceded by categorizing all indigenous people as one, saying horticulturalists, nomadic gatherer-hunters, and all these things are all the same, and that everything they did applied to everybody. You have primitive, if you want to call them primitive people, Cahokia were a civilized agrarian society with massive political and religious hierarchy. Their civilization collapsed, they weren't a civilized society, but they probably would have been considered primitive. My response is saying we have the potential to see for agency within reclaiming our own lives, within reclaiming the context available to us immediately, not through organization, not through the structured means, not through this hierarchy and all these things, but cool. People get those characterizations.
I think you're right, absolutely, that not all indigenous people were alike. I don't think that's what John was arguing. I think he was almost suggesting, I don't think you were saying that, but he was almost suggesting that you were saying that. I don't think he was saying that. But I think that there's also too much of a glorification of the noble savage and this kind of racist concept of, it's the noble savage, or it's the, the peaceable kingdom. Like, actually, evolutionarily speaking, there's no peaceable kingdom. Yeah, animals cooperate and animals kill each other. It's not, there's a hierarchy and there's a dominant male, dominant female sometimes. Not always, and primitive tribal cultures did have a structure. They, human beings, they had a community, they had a council, tribal council, democratic, you have an authoritarian chief, you have a democracy. It's not necessarily one way or another. They had some kind of structure of sorts. Even if it's just a family, there's a structure, or there's a parent, or whatever. But the thing is that I feel like you have this sense of there's like a certain limit, or is there a certain like God-given rule about where humans can progress, if only I hadn't lost agriculture, or, you know, the only way I hadn't lost the primitive, like, hunter-gatherer. Like, there are union workers, some of them, that think, if only we hadn't lost industry and hadn't gone overseas, and, there's always this magical place where Frankenstein's monster you cannot cross. But I would suggest it's not just about worker struggle is very important, and I don't think you can demean that, but I don't think it's certainly not the only thing that's important. I don't think environmentalism, feminism, like decolonization, these are all mutually exclusive, and things, most of the time, I think they overlap with each other. You can't be mutually reductive about it, or that's another complex issue, but I think the big thing with environmentalism is trying to get control over the resources to allocate them in a more intelligent manner. Just saying, I'm going to grow mushrooms in my backyard isn't going to stop the oil stack from polluting. It's not going to do that. The other thing we're talking about agency is, how do you get to primitivism and say you have no blueprint? But it's there can be a bunch of Marxists debating, or autonomous Marxists, or anarchists, whatever. I mean, there's a theory end of thing and there's a practical end of things. I mean, a bunch of Marxists debating in a room is not going to bring down capitalism. A bunch of primitivists debating in a room about how these ecological implications is not going to bring down civilization either. I think what Alexis and John Beck and some of them, what they were saying is how you would get to that in a practical manner. I mean, even Marxists and anarchists, say, through labor, through national liberation struggle, a number of things. How do you get to primitivism from here? I mean, you just leave the nuclear power plants the way they are and let them, rip, I mean, we cannot go back to the type of plentifulness we have because, like you pointed out, we destroyed it. So we have civilization. So how can we reorganize resources, not have this magical time period or level of technology that we go back to, but instead how to restructure our lives in terms of labor, in terms of the environment, in terms of cultures, women, everything like that is more equitable to everyone, including the earth. How do we get control of that, to reorganize, not just say, leave it up to chance, or, let's say, grow mushrooms in my backyard when the smokestack is still polluting, or, you have to reach out to the workers in the smokestack, get them to understand why, or else you're leaving everyone with no option as to control it.
Do you want to respond to that, or should we go to another question?
I'll try to respond to that as quickly as possible. The one is that that's kind of, ridiculous. I mean, it's reductionist view of saying that we have kind of that noble savage idea. There's, my main work is essentially drawing out the differences between nomadic other hunter societies and the implications of domestication within indigenous societies. And I don't buy that John wasn't offering primitivism as a reductionist, horrific, sense of simplified notion of kindergarten kind of politics or anti-politics, which I believe is anti-politics. I have no interest in politics, just destroying a political system. It's not as simple as you want to make it. It's not as simple.
I was trying to make it simple at all.
You said the noble savage, you were saying that we're...
Okay, well, I was saying that's what you were saying, but that that is something that some primitivists have. Well, the rest of my analysis was rather complex.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is that you have the history of civilization, which is people trying to take control and people trying to channel that control. And you disagree?
No, I'm just...
Okay. But, if you want to get down to the bare point of it, of saying that, part of it is, this is an unique situation. Like I said, we didn't put 7 billion people on this planet. We didn't say this is what's going on. We're not saying that there's not going to be horrific consequences of industrialism, but left to its own, as it's collapsing, it's going to continue going down the worst route. And it's not a matter of saying we need to control the resources, make these decisions. We're never going to have that control.
So how do you propose to go back to primitive civilization?
I'm saying that I believe in human nature. I believe that we have, millions of years of human and proto-human and wildness to look at, where we can see various kinds of societies that are relevant to ours or are close to ours as human. And I'm not saying there's no structure. I'm saying that there's community. And I'm saying that there's an innate function within society of all those things. Like the example of saying, you know, if there's just there are problems between humans that we're going to get, we're not going to get along, we're going to argue. Nomadic gatherer hunters actually have the potential to address those issues by saying that's going to be the case, so we all have the potential to move on. We have the potential to go stay with somebody else. And I mean, there's no way I can really sum it up. It's a really long answer. But I mean, essentially, it's really not that simple. And the problem is never going to be solved by making more technology, more of a mess, and hoping that we'll eventually get the control to make the decisions. But also, it's an asinine assumption to say that us in the first world have any right to talk about controlling resources. Most of those resources do not come from us, do not come from our areas. They come from places across the world, and the consequences of it are horrific in the truest sense of the word, not just some fantasy idea of saying that we're trying to talk about killing billions of people. Civilization is killing billions of people. It's killing the planet. We've become passé about the fact that industrialism is killing off all this life, and this is what's happening, and this is just how it's going to be. We refuse to accept that reality, and we're saying that something has to be done, and that something has to address and has to come from a point of understanding that the smokestack is going to be run by people who don't give a fuck. And it's going to continue to be run by people who don't give a fuck because they don't have to. And I don't think that we have the psychological capability of recognizing the consequences for those actions. I mean, like I said, I've met with and I've been
Kevin,
with
you were like,
world.
We're going on about Kensuru Wiwa. Kensuru Wiwa was a union organizer of oil workers. Like, the people who suffer from those things do organize to... Do organize to say enough, and enough poisoning us and our communities. And you know, I feel like your analysis is very unkind towards people. I'm not trying to make a case for industrialism, but I don't. You're not leaving people with a heck of a lot of places to go to do anything. Like, it's like you're like a big drag, you know. Like,
have you seen the consequences of industrialism?
Well, sure I have. I live them, and I'm living in this society, so they're all around me, of course. And you know, I feel like your argument is like kind of all over the place. You're a slippery critter. You don't fix yourself to any particular. You know, way of handling this, except like, well, we're all fucked, and so be it. Nothing you can do will work, and we shouldn't probably organize that at all anyway, because we're incapable of doing it.
What's
it's like,
the,
you
what's
know.
The point of organizing? Where is it going to lead you in the long run? That's my question. Not in the
so
short
that,
term, in the long run.
So
do you think civilization will go on forever? I mean.
I don't know. I feel like if
not really. No.
10,000 years
people,
dropping the bar.
Oh.
Can somebody okay. It's hot up here.
I have a question for
Alexis.
Alexis. For the simplest side, do you have like a plan for what's gonna happen like when the oil runs out? I mean, we probably have already reached peak oil, and our whole civilization is based on the oil economy, of all these jobs, all the unions, all the industrialization is based on oil, pretty much. I mean, is there a critique within cynicalism for how you're going to deal with the transition after that, you know, after the oil economy collapses, which it is going to collapse at some point because it's a finite resource?
Did everybody hear that question? About oil resources and when they run out, the cynicalists? Okay.
What does cynicalists do after the oil runs out? I think that the oil running out will pose a significant crisis to capitalism. I think that, excuse me, workers having more power through organizing, through building organizations, can only help a situation and help more people in that it won't be. If there's not that, then rich people will be able to do as they, capitalists will be able to do as they please and manipulate society as they please. I think we would probably, when workers have less power, historically this is, I think, almost always the case, then fascism tends to be what people turn to solve the problems. So I don't know of a syndicalist like answer for peak oil, frankly. I know, so what? I don't know. It's not. Does anybody have anything to say about syndicalism and peak oil?
John? I think that syndicalism is primarily, it's not quite an idea, it's more of a tactic, and it's a tactic used for workers organizing used during war. As far as peak oil is concerned, I think we shouldn't use oil. Like, we should decide as a community, we're not going to do this shit anymore. This is hurting us, you know. The problem now under capitalism is that if you take away oil, the workers will be out of work. So how do you solve that problem? You can put the workers in different sectors of work and decide that as a community that's not related to oil and destroying the earth. The point about the labor organizing, for example, the Mountain Justice Summer in Appalachia, although the union officials support the mining, a lot of union miners do not. They do not support strip mining, and they have aligned with the environmentalists against it, especially considering they're going to tear apart Blair Mountain, where the historic labor struggle was fought. So I think that there are workers that do care about the environment. We all do. But I think that goes back to what I was saying exactly, is that we should, as a community, not like as a state or as like a benevolent company that wants to reduce carbon emissions by 3% or some stupid shit like that, but actually like decide democratically on how to channel these resources. Say like the oil is killing us. Let's do something else besides that for energy. You know.
What other solutions are there really?
Well, I mean, there's no one solution, but there are a lot. Like, there's wind, solar, like, you can make solar where.
But then where do the resources come from all that? I mean, it's always going to be
You balance it. You balance it out. I mean, it does have a way of balancing itself.
Hang on, we had someone who wanted to
talk. I'm going somewhere else completely, actually. I'm related to this So, you might have already explained this. I did come in a couple minutes late, so you're already introducing your piece. I missed your introduction. But it seems that you take it as take for granted that civilization is collapsing. Which, I mean, on one hand, I sort of see a point that's like, oh, the economy is collapsing, the unemployment rate is at 9.1%, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, it's not really capitalism that's collapsing. It's just life for poor and working people that's getting shitty, but I don't know that that's the same thing as the collapse of capitalism, right?
I'm talking about the collapse of civilization.
Right.
So I'm talking about, like, the weather shifts and everything that are causing massive agricultural failures. I mean, just basically on every level.
200 species disappear every day.
Yeah. I mean, the oceans are dying. They're falling apart. The fisheries are falling apart at massive rates. The potential for, you know, massive crop extinctions is ridiculous, droughts taking out a lot of things. It all compounds. But yeah, I'm not just talking about the collapse of capitalism.
So what would you have us do about this?
So that's sort of my follow-up question is, civilization is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't really done a close study of it, but I feel like civilization has probably come close to that kind of class before, and it's followed up, you know, come back afterwards. What would you have us do differently this time to prevent the reinvention of civilization?
The ability of civilizations to rebound and expand has always been based on the potential for more resources. And like I said, there's the general idea that we've broken carrying capacity, we've broken free of this, and we've made it so that, you know, we grow whatever 5 head of corn in one space because of GMOs and things like that. But it's always been based on the potential for expansion. And we're at the point now where our civilization is entirely global to the point where, you know, shipping problems in Japan can shut down the economy in other parts of the world, where, you know, any level of drop-off in one place can lead to another place just dying off. And we can't, you know, we aren't growing food locally. Everybody's, you know, because of the World Bank, because of IMF, things like that. It's like set the dice for this global fallout whenever this does happen. And there's not the potential. There's, I mean, it's so, the drive of technology and the drive of progressive thinking is so arrogant that we've tossed out the previous knowledge for taking a couple steps back in terms of agricultural production. I mean, we build houses that are meant to fall apart because we know we're going to have the technology to get to the next place and make it cheaper and faster and replace it. And when you look at agricultural production, what people who consider themselves farmers, for the most part, aside from a very small percentage of people left in the world because of policies, in part, mainly, primarily capitalist policies, who lack the knowledge to actually grow crops without oil, without a workforce. And that's, like I said, most people, farmers are monocropping industrial agriculturalists. They just don't have the knowledge, they don't have the ability to take a step back and kind of reinvigorate where it is. But there's also, when you're looking at peak resources on a global scale, it's different than on any other level.
A good example of that is there were sugar beet farmers who were using GMOs, and it's a law passed where they're not allowed to use GMO sugar beets any longer, and they have to go back to using regular seeds. And the farmers are upset about this because they don't know how to. It's too expensive, and they said it's pointless, and a lot of them are just not farming anymore. I mean, we've learned to do something a certain way. We don't know.
But by the same token, in India, there are huge movements of farmers' unions and farmers' organizations that burn GMO seeds and, go and actively go toe-to-toe with them as a movement. And I think, that's where the hope is, right? Like, it's not in people saying, well, screw it, I'm not going to be a farmer anymore. I'm giving up that life, and I'm going to get a... You know that they're going to go work at Walmart, right? Like, the hope is in those movements of people who say, no, our labor has dignity, and we're going to use it in a way that we see as good for us and good for the world.
My dream, honestly, is everybody just walk out of their fucking job. Because if they did, there would be no power. I mean, a boss is a boss because the worker's giving them the power.
Yes, that's also my dream, but, why would that happen?
And I'm like, farms just suck anyway because they destroy the land. So I'm not going to go into all that. I'm just going to...
Well, how would you do for a living if you did that? Like, if you walked out, like, what would you do? Just hunt squirrels that are
around? Yeah, I would go. But no, that's not for everybody. So, I mean, that's me individually.
Well,
we can't
stop you doing that now.
How do you know that I don't?
Well, because you're here.
So, does that matter?
Well, I mean, there's society. There's small groups of people that live out in the woods and live off the
grid. I can still live out in the woods and still have communication with the outside world, right?
Oh, I'm just... You're obviously philosophically opposed to
that
idea, or you should be doing it
right.
I don't even work.
No, that's not necessarily true. I mean, it's illegal to hunt and gather. I mean, if you say that, it's ignoring the consequences within the society of resource extraction, all these things. I mean, hunter-gatherer societies throughout the world are the most under attack because their way of life not only stands in the way of the last places where it's extremely hard to access resources live, but because the very potential that you can live without this way of life, without this system, without technology, is a threat. That idea alone is dangerous. And if you go out, if I want to go out and I say I want to do, I mean, for one part, it's pretending that there's like some kind of like hypocrisy in saying these things. I mean, these guys are anti-capitalists, they're using money for the magazines. I mean, it's the same kind of argument, but I just think that kind of breaking it down and saying, well, why aren't you doing it? Is ignoring the fact that, it's not true for everybody. I mean, if we're anarcho-primitivists, we are angry, we're pissed. We want something done about what's going on, and I want people to make those connections. I want people to go out and actually have those engagements and actually go out and forage mushrooms in the backyard because it's empowering, and I think that's important, and I think it's a good way to build a community. But it's not enough for me to say, that's what you want to do. And I'm not trying to tell people what to do. Like I said, I don't really care. I want people to walk away from this. But I know that's not necessarily going to be the case. I would rather focus my energy on taking out the civilization that makes it possible for anyone to have these decisions. I mean, frankly, I don't care. I don't care if somebody wants to be a GMO farmer. But I want to take out the system that makes it possible for their decisions to employ labor and employ and tear down rainforests to grow all this stuff. I mean, if you want to be a fascist, I don't care. I'm going to take out the grid. The grid's going to kill itself. It's going to suffocate itself. It's inevitable, and it's a cannibalistic drive that drives it. If somebody wants to be a fascist, it's only possible so long as the society and the social and technological mechanisms make it possible for that position to exist. And I want to target those mechanisms. But it is important to notice. It's like that doing that, living wild like that, doesn't necessarily take on this. But I mean, if you want to do that, I encourage it. But it is legal, and that's just right. How it is. Sorry.
Yeah, I feel like I agree with a lot of the primitivist critique that you've like presented, but it's like, why is that not a possible critique to hold while organizing in a workplace? Why, like, I understand, like, I hear people asking, like, what does organization do? But my understanding of the discussion so far is like organizing and also critiquing everything that you're critiquing, or not organizing and also critiquing it and doing nothing. So like that's where I'm at, and I'm just like wondering why you can't do both.
You can, I don't really care.
I think he's just saying personally, like, that's what he chooses to spend his energy.
I mean, I think it's a misnomer to say that organizing in the workforce, and I don't think these guys are necessarily saying that organizing the workforce is going to lead to the collapse of civilization. I just, like I said, I don't think as a strategic goal for how to get to where I think that things should be going, I don't find it useful, but I don't care. And I mean, frankly, man, if you guys organize, you get a general strike that's permanent, more power to you. I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, if you want to go out and people burning GMO crops on our side as much as not, so do it.
B, you want to put it?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think almost all these questions come down to the question of, like, what would you have people do with their time? Because I think even those of us who maybe are sympathetic to a lot of what you're saying, you know, when it comes down to that question of what are we doing with our time, you're sort of like, well, fuck it, I don't care. So in the default position in our society is that people go home and play video games, you know? So they isolate, there's total apathy. So I'm sort of surprised that you won't advocate for real wilding or the growing mushrooms. Or I mean, I'd like to hear any sort of positive program other than playing video games that you would have people with their time. Seriously. Like, I understand the negative that you don't like organizing. And I think any of us who have ever organized for a demand come to a point where we're frustrated with that. And we sort of agree, like, yeah, okay, that's not what we really want in the end. But it's not enough to just say, okay, so let's strike at the root, you know, or let's dismantle the system. And so a moment ago you were saying, I want to do things that eliminate the capacity of society to exist. Okay, well, what is that? What are you going to do? Are you going to do direct action at a power station? Are you going to, you know, plant bombs at a power station and blow this stuff up? I mean, what are you advocating that people do with their time? That's what I'm
saying. I'm advocating nobody ever ask that question again. Absolutely not. Okay, I mean, there's a couple parts to it, and part of what is perceived as a fuck it response is in part fact.
You did literally say that, though.
No, fuck it, in terms of if he wants to organize in the workforce, fuck it, I don't care. I really don't. I do want people, I'm not saying I don't want people to make change. I'm saying, like, I advocate. I say, as far as what I can advocate, definitely rewilding, definitely, you know, making these connections, pointing out to people and getting out there, rebuilding community. I mean, that's one of the important things I say. Rewilding is not just, it's not a concept. It's just a reality. It's something that exists within us. And it's not something that we have to wait for a revolution to attain. And it's something that I really think is important. I think it's important because I don't think that I'm going to tell you about civilization and it's going to make sense to you in the same way as it makes sense to me or anybody else. It's open to interpretation, but it's something that will be gained through personal experience, and I hope that you get that. And I know that as an individual that you will, and I want to provide, my main goal as a writer and as a speaker is to offer context. Offering solutions is, on the one side, I do want to advocate community. I do want to advocate people getting into rewilding. As far as concrete resistance measures, I hope that you're smart enough to figure it out. Because answering any of those questions will put me in jail. And are you laughing? I can't tell if that's just a smirk. Are you serious? Are you aware of the Green Scare?
The grand jury that have been going on?
You sit here and you suggest that the only thing we can do is these individual acts of terrorism, which you're not going to advocate because they're unlawful. But
dude, shut the fuck up. For real. Shut the fuck up. Because I don't need fucking shitbag anarchists like you sitting here and talking shit about green anarchists while our fucking people are behind bars. You're shitty ass fucking organizations. I'm sorry. You guys pulled support from Marie Mason while she was behind bars. We would never take out an ideological problem on an anarchist prisoner. You have to know. You have to know. That as anarchists, we have people behind jail, and they're behind there. They're in those behind those bars for a reason. And you have to know. I've been to the grand jury. I've been called there twice. I've had my phone records examined, and I've had people ask me questions. And you have to know that people like Eric McDavid are sitting in jail right now, never having actually committed an action, but for having agreed that the premise of those actions are worth acting on. It's one thing for me to say I can't say these things. It's another thing for you to try and attack us for saying, you're saying that those things shouldn't be done.
But you have a strategy that precludes people organizing to take control of their lives. And so you have to, you find yourself compelled either to this abstract theorizing or to these weird little conspiracies which are easily infiltrated by the police and which land lots of your people in jail. It's a little thing, the way they infiltrate people and play under emotions and all that. But you don't have a program for social transformation. You have a program that says, let's wait for the whole thing to collapse around us, and then we'll all be destroyed.
You have to read between the lines.
Yeah. I think that it's a little unfair to address Kevin's points about that, because it's sort of a different paradigm. We're looking to like engage him in this like paradigm where we assume that things are always going to organize, and somehow that like we have this confidence that we can kind of steer the organization and save the planet and everything. Where I think like the wild card that he has, which is really intriguing to me, is that basically all organization is bound or will tend to collapse. Or I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think like any sort of special or any numerous generations of organization is just bound to get so complex and collapse or run itself into the ground. I don't know, I think it's a little unfair to think that we have to, we're like, have a strategy when there's sort of like, what he's saying is there's almost this inevitability of it, just us not being able to steer it anymore.
Yes, politics of despair, which leaves the environment totally destroyed like Easter Island, and all dead.
But at the same time, I think like,
that was a civilization.
Even I am increasingly more and more pessimistic about a revolution coming. Like, how many more decades do we have to wait for, you know, any of the things that have been advocated now for a century to actually get us back on track?
Tom?
I think a lot of people are, like, jumping on Kevin for, like, a lack of answers, but on the other side of things, like, so we have a, like, a worker-owned factory. Like, how is that destroying the planet any less? Like, what's your end result? I think early on, Kevin said something about this is his theory being like short-sighted, and I'm just wondering, like, yeah, like, what's the big picture within like industrialism? Like, you're not combating industrialism. You said you're not gonna argue for it, but in a sense, you are if you're not gonna critique it at the same time.
No, I definitely critique it. I absolutely critique it.
So, what's your like desired end result then?
Well, the desired end result is that the power of labor lies in the hands of the people who do the labor, not people who profit from the
horizontally structured smokestack isn't going to destroy the planet any less.
Well, why would anybody in their right mind decide as a community we need to make power this way? We need to devastate the earth. I mean, if people,
it's not up to the individual.
Yeah, but isn't like
right? Right, of course. Right, it has to be a. Thank you. I mean, I think. Over and over again, there are many examples of workers when they have power. Thank you, will you?
Of course I do.
When they have power, making decisions that are not going to devastate their lives, that will improve people's lives. So, I'm sorry?
To me, the answer is you've never convinced a capitalist, like an owner, that a smokestack shouldn't be open. But you might convince the people who are in your community that it shouldn't be open. And if the people in your community have that power, then you can go somewhere. But if just capitalists are on it.
They're capitalists.
Yeah, exactly. We never get through with that.
I think I agree with what he just said.
I mean, there's always a possibility. I mean, I think the problem with one of the problems with capitalism, to some extent, the state as well, is it it's not just. I mean, remember, most people are workers. I mean, of some variety, they do. Most people work. Some people are on welfare. Some people squat, whatever. But most people work. But I think that the whole problem here is that capitalism pits livelihood of a job versus the environment, not just the global warming, and that's definitely important, but also like in your community, having smut in your community, and if you don't, then you don't have a job. Like that's the problem. It's like you have to choose between your livelihood and pollution. I also want to say that as far as capitalism, I think is on the fritz. I don't know if it's going to collapse or anything like that, but it is on the fritz. The problem is, of course, people might have a solution that's worse. Or that's a more terrible form of capitalism, but the Tea Party or something. But I mean, it is the banks collapsed the way they did in the 1929 and stuff. And as far as like, let's hook back in and go. Like, let's not get personal with this too. Like, there are a lot of things you can say. The unions tier backed, not syndicalist backed pollution. You can say about Craig's Roseboro busting the union in Seattle at Calendula, or was it Portland, or forget
it's
a few years ago.
Right,
we shouldn't bring up these like personal examples of, you know. But.
Yeah.
I have a response. I don't think anyone is necessarily delusional enough to believe that organizing alone is going to take down the civilization. I don't think anyone is delusional enough to believe that if everyone walked out of their jobs today, that we would be able to
be able to go in the castle.
I just want to be inside. It's rather privileged for all of us to have this discussion about primitivism and taking down civilization when the majority of people, this concept doesn't even cross their mind because they're too hungry or impoverished to even conceptualize it. And I think that organizing is a very valuable tool in awakening people into seeing the conditions that they're in. And I think also that individual insurrectionary actions are very valuable in that they empower people to take a stand in what they see is wrong and take direct action on their lives. So I don't think that there's necessarily a conflict between these two ideologies because our goal is the same. We're trying to awaken people into understanding the conditions of the world. And I think that it's not a really question of when it's going to happen, but really how.
This is the person who owns.
All
this is the person who owns.
Method than debating on which one.
Let me say something real quick. It's 9:15. We were going to stop at 9. We will keep the fucking doors open all night if people want to stay. But for people who do want to leave, or if you all need to leave or whatever, Kevin has books here. There's Anarcho-Syndicalist Reviews up here as well. So if you want to get one of those before you leave, please come and do that. But also, let's keep the discussion going because that's why we're here tonight with no time limit on it.